Fax 1580 AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. The magnitude 5.2 earthquake was centered in Kern County, California, but felt as far south as Los Angeles.
There have been a bunch of aftershocks since the main quake, most of them very small. It was a few seconds of swaying in the main quake, felt heavier in northern LA County and in Kern County, north of LA, where the epicenter was. The LA Fire Department went out in what it calls earthquake mode, surveying the city. No damage was found, but it definitely rattled a lot of nerves on a Tuesday evening as people were at home relaxing.
ABC's Alex Stone in Los Angeles. Wisconsin and Michigan, the first two swing states Vice President Harris will visit today with newly chosen running mate Tim Walz, the Minnesota governor. The Richmond, Virginia-based federal appeals court on Tuesday upheld Maryland's decade-old ban on semi-automatic rifles, including the AR-15, the majority rejecting the argument of gun rights groups that the ban is unconstitutional. This is ABC News. A few years after pandemic mask mandates, they're now banned in a New York City suburb. ABC's Brian Clark explains.
Face masks worn in public to hide one's identity are now banned in Nassau County on New York's Long Island. The county's Republican-controlled legislature introduced and passed the bill, saying it was in response to anti-Semitic incidents carried out by people wearing masks. The New York Civil Liberties Union says it's a free speech infringement. There are exceptions for health and religious reasons. Penalties include up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. Brian Clark, ABC News, New York.
And he's off. Jim the Shark Dreher entered Lake Michigan at Grand Haven, Michigan, Tuesday, intent on swimming across the lake to Milwaukee, 83 miles or more away, depending on lake conditions. He's trying to repeat the feat he first performed in 1998 when it took 41 hours. He's trying to raise money for the nonprofit U.S. Coast Guard Chief Petty Officers Association. Richard Cantu,
Welcome to the Lazy Oaf Lounge, Madison's east side place for friends and family to meet for fun and food. Stop in for great daily lunch specials, soups made from scratch, and jaw-dropping burgers, wraps, and sandwiches. Plus Friday fish fry and homemade pizza cooked in a classic stone hearth pizza oven. The Lazy Oaf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow them on Facebook or at LazyOafLounge.com.
I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WMDX website at mad.radio.
Matt Nair on air.
We were talking about Donald Trump. I'm sorry, Donald Trump. He also said that he knows how to correctly pronounce Kamala Harris's name. He just chooses not to. And so I think that kind of opens it up for us to take some liberties.
Yeah, what would be your fix to the name?
Dave from New Berlin texting in Conald.
Conald.
Dump. Also, Calvin's was Donald Trump.
Who said there's a correct one?
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays at 11 on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Communities around Wisconsin are getting money to reach out to people who need lead pipes removed. $900 million in loan money comes from the bipartisan infrastructure law. Communities can start applying at the end of the month. More than 37,000 lead service lines have been replaced or shut off in Wisconsin since 2018. Expect to hear more about reproductive rights from Vice President Kamala Harris as she campaigns for president. Marquette poll director Charles Franklin says it's the number one issue for Democratic voters.
But independents rank it quite a ways down. And so I think it's possible that she may emphasize that issue more than Biden was doing. Whether that brings any independents over is an open question.
Franklin speaking with Wisconsin Eye. Harris and Republican running mate J.D. Vance will both campaign in Eau Claire tomorrow. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
Jordan Love will play this week. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers holding practice, getting ready to play the Browns in Cleveland in their first preseason game, and Matt LaFleur has decided he wants to see Jordan Love take some snaps in the game. The quarterback's reaction at his locker.
You know, I'm excited just to be able to get back, get the feel of the season getting started. So get out there, see how long we're out there. But anytime you get to be on the field, I think it's a good opportunity to, you know, work on things, get better.
And it looks like his right tackle, Zach Tom, is ready to go after tearing a pectoral muscle in the weight room last April. Zach back. Tom asked if he's had any contact in pads yet.
I was doing that all last week. You could say that was like the last hurdle. They wanted to give me some live-ish reps. You know, that was good. That was good to prepare me for this week. And now we're obviously to the next step, which would be me playing in the game.
Baseball tonight, the Brewers and Braves in Atlanta after a huge win for Milwaukee last night, 10-0. Seven scoreless innings by Colin Ray. The Braves outscored 17-0 in their last two games. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Partly cloudy today. We will get into the upper 70s to around 80 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the southeast at 5 to 10. Tonight, a sprinkle or two possible. Otherwise, partly cloudy, low of 60. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the mid to upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 57.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, 11:33, Dr. Laura Hanks with public cervix announcement. Send in your questions to janesays@civicmedia.us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 11.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who always looks ahead, even when parallel parking, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back. We kick off hour number two of Nightlight, broadcasting live statewide from beautiful downtown. This is a gorgeous summer night, and I think it is pretty much all over Wisconsin. Great stuff tonight. Just a beautiful night. Tomorrow night on the show, Andrea Belke will be here. She's the host of Discover Wisconsin and a survivor from the show Survivor. So that'll be exciting to talk to Andrea about some of her experiences. And then Alan Talaga will be here. He has the hit show Paul Blart 3. Which apparently takes place during an apocalypse. It's a stage show in Madison that is going on the road. I'm very excited to talk to Nathan about that. And Aunt Carla checks in on our clown question tonight. She says, go Baraboo, the proud clown circus heritage. The proud clown. Tony, there's your next movie, The Proud Clown. I love that. Tony Boswell is here. He's agreed to stick around with us a little longer tonight. And great catching up with you, buddy. So, all right, I want to talk about this before, you know, just in the event we run out of time, because this was one of my most memorable nights working the road in stand-up. Even though it was just Milwaukee, that club was always great. The crowds, one of my favorite rooms ever to work. It was so much fun.
It was the cafe, right?
Comedy Cafe on Brady Street. Yeah. And the staff was fun. And I remember we went back to the apartment where they put us up, which was kind of kitty corner from the club. And there was a few valet guys and waitresses. One of the owners might have been there. And we were talking forever. And we went down into the basement because we had heard that a restaurant called Giovanni's used to have bootlegging tunnels to that very apartment. So we went down in the basement. It was like, I remember it as being like 12 people. And we were feeling the walls where they might be. I don't know what we were going to do if we found one, but it was a fun night.
Yeah, I do. So everybody would always go back to that condo across the street and party after the shows or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember there was like did we have to like jimmy the door to get into the stairwell to get downstairs? Somewhere we ended up against a door that we couldn't get through.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's coming back to me now. But we did not find the tunnels, but the idea that we were looking for them and it was like an Al Capone's vaults type thing. It was our Geraldo moment, I guess. And we never found it, but it was just fun. It felt like kind of an adventure, you know?
Yeah.
That was a really fun night. Do you have a lot of road stories? Did you like working the road?
I did for, you know, 25 years. The last few, it definitely got tiresome, you know? Yeah. We, at a point, like I was on the road all the time, and my wife, who had a great corporate job, she became a traveling consultant. And so at that point, we just basically flipped.
Wow.
I stayed at home, and then she would travel like Monday through Thursday as a consultant.
Nice.
And then, I was fine with it after that.
Did
I would just do local things.
you've worked or you've lived in North Carolina, right? Chicago. You started in Chicago, mm-hmm. then you went to Carolina, and now you're in the Pittsburgh area. Have you noticed different club, like, are crowds different in those different locales?
Well, I, by the time we moved here, I had already stopped, but I used to do Pittsburgh all the time for the Funny Bone chain. And Pittsburgh and Chicago are so similar. Just, you know, blue collar neighborhood mentality. People are friendly and, you know, they let you in when your turn signal's on. And in the South, you know, never felt at home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I remember, I mean, we're liberal Chicagoans, and I would put up our Hillary sign, and then, like, within moments, the Trump sign would come out the window across the street, you know? So it was very combative.
Okay. Yeah. So you weren't going to go out there and start cracking jokes to your neighbor is what I'm taking away from this.
Well, I never backed down. And, you know, where we lived in the Charlotte area was kind of a transplant area. It was a growing suburb.
Right.
So, like, on our street, of the 40 houses on that street, I think there was one person that grew up in Charlotte.
Oh, no kidding.
Everybody else was from, you know, Philadelphia, Chicago, you know, Maryland. They were from everywhere.
It's kind of how LA was. And I liked that about it. You could always find your people, you know. Yeah. There was great Wisconsin bars and Chicago bars that I ended up really enjoying. It's interesting, like, with club owners. We talked about this a little bit the other day on the phone. You have all these club owners. To a man, it seems like nobody hates. There's not one that everybody dislikes or one that everybody loves. Did you have one you didn't like or were ever mistreated by? Or did you have one you loved who was good to you?
Club owners?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, club owners. Comedy
well,
club.
You know, I think you and I talked on the phone last week about Jeff Schneider here in Pittsburgh.
Right.
It was always great to me. But a lot of people hated him, you know.
Right.
There's a famous story of somebody sent him a video back when we used to literally send video cassettes of your act.
Yeah.
And then the guy calls him like a week later. I sent you my tape. Did you watch it? And Jeff's like, "Oh, you're Dumbo." And the guy's like, What do you think? My act was dumb? He goes, "No, I recorded Dumbo over you for my kids."
And that was my relationship with him. Like, he really irritated the living daylights out of me a couple times. And we've told those stories off the air. I won't go back into them now. But then he would make me laugh. And I'm like, damn you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't want to be laughing. And there were a lot of owners like that. That just kind of drove you crazy. But then there were some, you know, whatever. I guess everybody has different relationships. But
you know who's one of the best to me ever in Chicago? Bill Brady. You remember Bill Brady's Comedy Capers? It was a room where you weren't allowed to say the F word.
You know,
the harshest you could usually be was hell or damn.
Right.
And but it was very hypocritical because he would do, like, you know, gay jokes.
A lot of gay jokes.
Yeah. But I started out there when I was, you know, first starting. I was an opener, and then I showed up one day. I was, you know, for my booking, and I was the middle. He didn't tell me ahead of time. He just showed up. You're the feature act today. And then a couple of years later, I showed up for my feature gig. You're the headliner now.
Whoa.
And then from then on, I mean, just, you're ready. You know.
Oh, that's
pretty
cool.
He just gave it to you with. Yeah. So, I mean, I always respected him for that.
Yeah. I always liked Bill too. I felt bad at times. Like, whenever there was a holiday at that club, he would go all out. Like, if it was Valentine's Day, Bill would dress up as a Cupid and do his act and open the show that way. And I remember, I think it was either Brian Noonan or Mike Siegel and I showed up, and we were just dressed to do a show. And he goes, "Gentlemen, thanks for wearing red." Really sarcastic. And we're like, what? Like, we're not going to do that, Bill. And he goes, "That's why they're here, guys." He scolded us. And then another time, and Siegel told the story the same way. He's like, he said something. I think Bill was dressed like he was at the beach. He had sunglasses on and a straw hat and a bathing suit. And he was going to go up and open the show like that. And he said, and Mike Siegel goes, "Hey, Bill, nice threads." And he goes, "Malibu rum night, Mike." I just kept walking, you know, like, oh, that was fun. Yeah. Bill was always good to me.
I'd say the flip side of that for a road story. Do I still have time?
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Zanies, which was also very good to me over the years.
Yeah.
You know, like when my son was born, Bert booked me to be house MC for a month at every club. So I got to stay in Chicago for like 4 months straight after my son was born, which was fantastic.
But
the first time I ever worked for them, it was downtown. I was the MC. It was 10 shows. Remember when the week was Tuesday through Sunday?
Yes.
With three Friday, three Saturday. Yeah. And you got $50 a show. So I got $500 to be the MC, which was great, you know, for somebody just starting comedy.
Yeah.
And then a couple years later, I got promoted to feature act. The year they cut the pay for the feature acts down to $500 for the week. And then the first time I got promoted to headline for them was out in St. Charles, which was a shorter week, Thursday to Saturday.
Yeah.
$500 to headline.
You
over 10 years, always got my $500.
That Tony Boswell drives a hard bargain. It's going to cost us 500 beans. We got more people checking in on the stream. Do either of you know comedian Dobie Maxwell? Of course I know Dobie Maxwell.
I know Dobie very well.
Carolyn again, and then Craig Anthony Kennett says, Gags the Clown had some popularity in Green Bay and the state. Creepy. Totally agree, Craig. And then Carolyn says, yes, Dobie was at Zany's many times. Yes, he was, Carolyn. Thank you for checking in. I've worked with Dobie several times. Tone, on this show, what we do typically is talk about what we're watching. So are you binge watching anything you can recommend to people or seeing any summer blockbuster films that you could recommend?
Well, yeah, I went to Deadpool, which I was waiting for.
Okay.
You know, I thought it was great. My wife and I binge watch, you know, that's our routine. Basically after dinner, we go through stuff, but we kind of burned out everything. You know, we're waiting for the new crop of stuff to come up.
Yeah.
So Vikings Valhalla, we're about to start the final season of that.
That's good, huh? And
yeah. Well, the first two seasons, we watched the whole Vikings series, the original Vikings one.
Yeah.
And then this is sort of the spinoff series.
Okay.
But really excited for Severance, which is coming back.
Yep.
Have you watched Severance?
I have not watched Severance.
Oh, definitely. Hi, Adam Scott. It's a great sci-fi comedy business. Yeah. Severance high on the list. Silo, The Last of Us.
Did you like The Last of Us?
I did.
You know, I it was weird. I liked it, but I felt like Walking Dead did it better. The first season of Walking Dead anyway. It was weird. I don't know what it was. It's not like I didn't like The Last of Us. I was just like waiting for something. And then they would do a totally different episode, like with Nick Offerman and the actor from White Lotus. It was great, but it was sort of like it took you totally out of the narrative over the series. And, you know, they made it work and it was a phenomenal episode. It should have won awards if it didn't. But
I thought Offerman was going to get Emmy nominations for that for sure.
Yeah. Hey, we got to do this again, buddy. This was fun. We'll carve out more time next time to talk about movies and color television. But great catching up.
Well, one note, I have all these like jokes I was supposed to work in today, so I'll have to save some. But I got to say this one.
Okay.
To remind everybody that Pete Schwabba is John Rigi's favorite flavor of ice cream.
That's great. Pete Schwabba, order it off the menu. All right, we got to go. Thanks so much, buddy. We'll do it again.
Thanks, man.
It's Tony Boswell. Tom Lennon coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I feel it's happened to me, and I'm telling you, it's too late to turn back now.
Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I was in a drive-thru line and forgot to order. I was on the phone, thought I ordered, and just stayed in line and got up to the window. There was no order for me. And I said to the guy, I go, can I just order now? And he was so condescending. And he goes, well, typically what we do, sir, here is we order back at the speaker, and this is where you pick it up. I've never felt so stupid in my entire life.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. We'll be right back. It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Seen her dressed in blue. See the sky in front of you.
Great to have you with us on this amazing, fun summer night here in Wisconsin. We are broadcasting statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay. I'm very excited to welcome this next guest to Nightlight. I've been excited to have him on for a while, but he's a very busy guy. But he has been gracious enough to join us tonight via stream. You might know his work if you've watched Reno 911, where he plays Lieutenant Jim Dangle. I hope I'm getting the rank right. I think it's Lieutenant. He's also written The Pacifier, Night at the Museum, several other films, and he joins us tonight on Nightlight. Tom Lennon. Hey, Tom.
Pete, it is great, great, great to see you, Pete.
You too, and buddy.
You.
You know, it's weird. Most of the way I keep in touch with people now that live on either coast are on this show over the StreamYard. So I'll take it, man. If this is all I get of Tom Lennon, I'm thrilled to have you.
The weird detail, though, is I'm not really that far away from you.
Oh, no. Where are you?
I'm in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
You know what? I saw that.
You know I live in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, right?
I didn't know you live there. I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Like full time?
Exactly what douchey Illinois people are supposed to do.
Well, you're better off. No, we used to go up to like when I grew up in Chicago. We'd go up to Three Lakes and Eagle River. So you're
my mom grew up going to Eagle River, and they would go up and. The big thing to do at the time at Eagle River is they would go watch bears at the garbage dump at night.
Yes.
Because the bears would come into the dump and you could just go watch the bears. And that was a, you know, for a family of seven, which they were, that was a nice, that was a reasonably priced evening of Eagle River garbage dump bear watching.
With the hint of just enough of a hint of danger to make it exciting. That's
oh, for sure.
I know your parents because I've met them a few times because they would come to screenings of the film we did together, The Godfather Green Bay. They're very nice people.
Anytime there was a screening of that, they've been at it. Yeah.
They were great. They were in Madison, Wisconsin, and I was just blown away by that. It was so nice of them, and they're just lovely people. Are they in?
For a long time, they lived at in Williams Bay, which is the other side of the lake. We're on the south shore of the lake.
Yeah. Okay. That's a heck of a rivalry there when it comes to
for sure
high school fencing.
Well, it's a bummer they've got the Wrigleys on their side. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's north side of the lake's got south side of the lake's got me and Tito of Tito's, and then north side of the lake has Wrigleys and the Armor hot dog people.
Oh yeah,
there's it's more old-timey stuff on the north side of the lake. Yeah,
it would be really cool if you had like a contingency of Tito's, like Tito Puente, Tito Jackson, and like
we got to get some more Tito's on this side of the lake. Yeah, currently we just have one. I mean, we have a very good one, but
that's an impressive one. Yeah, are you there full time? Are you just kind of commute when you have to?
We lived here full time for the first 3 years that we lived here. Now we're back and forth to Los Angeles a little bit, but we're predominantly in Wisconsin just because I greatly prefer to be in Wisconsin. If I'm given a choice in the matter, I like being here. So,
well, good for you. I have to say, I've been here now 13 years, and I miss LA a lot. I miss Chicago at times. It's easier for me to get there, but it's so easy to live here, Tom. That's what makes it kind of enjoyable.
The quality of your life is just night and day between, the first, one of the first days that we lived, we were out here at Lake Geneva and the lake had frozen over and we were walking out on the frozen lake and there was a weird sound that I was hearing and didn't know what it was. It was just a little tick, tick sound that kept happening. And then I found out what it was. And it was actually the sound of snowflakes that were landing on my hard shell jacket.
Oh my gosh, yes.
But it was so quiet that I could hear individual snowflakes landing on me. And I was like, wow, this is a really interesting, cool place to be.
It's like the most soothing sound ever. I know
it was
exactly
really
what you're
neat. Yeah,
about.
Yeah.
Well, that's so cool. That adds a layer to this interview, which I wasn't anticipating. So welcome to Wisconsin.
No, I know. We can talk about all Wisconsin stuff. Thanks. Yeah. It's nice to be here.
On behalf of a fellow transplant. I wanted to ask you, this is funny, because I always think of you when I think about the time we worked together on The Godfather of Green Bay, which was a
great picture,
absolute...
by the way. Everybody's seen it by now at this point who listens to your show, but that's a great picture of The Godfather of Green Bay.
Well, let me say, just before I turn this into a total stroke fest, what you did with that part, Tom, that was a lesson for me, because I had only written scripts that had been sold. Only one of them ever got made. And I didn't realize what an actor brought to a role, and I was not prepared for it until I saw you and Lance in those specific roles. But you, with the way you just improvised and you just brought something to it that was a real education for me as a director. I had never directed before either, but so the feeling is mutual, and you gave me
a great thing to run with, which was really fun, which is Doug, the stand-up comic who just despises the Chicago Bears, to me was like, I'm like, I just get this. I just know what this guy is. So I got, all that really happened was you gave me a real weird haircut. I had such a strange hair. I have like a weird flat top in the movie. It looks really just weird, but I got this like that weird flat top. And then we would film in that great, funny. I love that little bar that we filmed. It was in Marinette? Where were we? Marinette?
It was that, the bar was actually in Menominee, Michigan, about 3-4 miles out of town.
Oh, yeah, we were
right
in the UP.
The river. Yeah, right across the
I
river.
Oh, I forgot we were in the UP.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful bar. And on the inside, it looked gorgeous. And
it was neat. It was really cool.
It was fun. I also remember you had a beeper that I think you added that, and that was just brilliant.
Did I? No, I don't. Now, I actually might need to watch it again, but that's a very good idea.
So this was kind of funny. We had an offer out to you, I remember, and another actor who was, pretty well known said that we had offered him a different role, which we already cast. He wanted to do this role. And so they made him an offer. And when we heard that you were interested, I was like, oh my God, pull the offer, whatever. And the producer.
Oh no, you fired somebody?
No, we didn't. No. And Brian said, no, you can't do that. We just have to hope this other guy passes. And he did. And we got you. And
I was thrilled
because you were also in another movie that I had co-written called The Guy Thing, and you were great in that, and then but also as Dangle you were phenomenal. And I thought I think what happened was we made the offer to you, if I remember correctly, and you thought you knew me from A Guy Thing, but you didn't realize it was the other writers that had replaced us. So you said, okay, let's do it, and then you met me and you're kind of giving me this look, and
I don't know you.
But you had had a long flight and a 3-hour car drive. I don't think you were turning around at that point. So,
no. Although I think I flew into Green Bay. It wasn't actually that far.
I thought you flew into Milwaukee and some PA gave you a ride and talked off.
I specifically remember flying into Green Bay.
Okay.
I don't know how that worked, but I did.
Well, we spared no expense. So
you spared no expense.
There's no.
Oh man, that was a. I just remember one night we were sitting in the bar with Mark Borchard.
Yeah.
And it was like 2 or 3 in the morning at the bar that we were filming at. And Mark said, well, I got to go, guys. And we're like, Mark, where are you going? He's like, well, the liquor stores are closing. And it was like, Mark, we're sitting at the bar, man. It's like going to stay open for us forever. And then it was just so interesting. He was an interesting cat. Yeah.
I'll tell you this about Mark. I've tried to have him on the show, and Mark has been sober for 15 years or something like that now. He is like a great student of film, and I've tried to get him on this show, Tom, and he's like, Pete, man, it's not my thing, but he goes, I'm a huge supporter. Every tweet he shares, he is like a sweetheart of a guy, and he was so much fun on that set. But
yeah, it was fun. I might throw it on later tonight because I'm overdue. I'm very overdue.
Oh, when in Wisconsin. It's been a while for me too. So, all right. My guest is Tom Lennon. You know him possibly as Jim Dangle from Reno 911, a very funny writer and actor. He's joining us here tonight on Nightlight. We'll be back with more with Tom in just a minute. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's progress we have found.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. The magnitude 5.2 earthquake was centered in Kern County, California, but felt as far south as Los Angeles.
There have been a bunch of aftershocks since the main quake, most of them very small. It was a few seconds of swaying in the main quake, felt heavier in northern L.A. County and in Kern County, north of L.A., where the epicenter was. The L.A. Fire Department went out in what it calls earthquake mode, surveying the city. No damage was found, but it definitely rattled a lot of nerves on a Tuesday evening as people were at home relaxing.
ABC's Alex Stone in Los Angeles. Wisconsin and Michigan, the first two swing states, Vice President Harris will visit today with newly chosen running mate Tim Walz, the Minnesota governor. The Richmond, Virginia-based federal appeals court on Tuesday upheld Maryland's decade-old ban on semi-automatic rifles, including the AR-15, the majority rejecting the argument of gun rights groups that the ban is unconstitutional. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Working people in Wisconsin need more opportunities to boost their income. That's according to Robert Craig of Wisconsin Citizen Action. He recommends more access to job training programs.
A lot of the workforce training programs we have are helpful to a number of people, but they don't move the inequality numbers because they don't reach enough people.
A new University of Wisconsin study finds income inequality is growing in Wisconsin, although the problem is worse in other states. Wisconsin wildlife officials are out with their fall hunting forecast for 2024. The archery and bow deer season for deer is being extended in some areas. The Department of Natural Resources expects good harvest numbers for turkeys, pheasants, grouse, and bear. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Ben Affleck cannot seem to get decent press lately. TV host Sarah Ferguson recently slammed the actor as one of her worst interviews ever after discussing the film Air, in which Affleck plays Phil Knight. Ferguson told the Sydney Morning Herald that Affleck appeared disinterested and rude throughout their chat, which took place last year. Affleck defended himself a few weeks later on Jimmy Kimmel Live, saying that is just what his face looks like, and that is how God made him. Yeah, but you're an actor. Pal Matt Damon doesn't seem to care that Affleck doesn't smile much because making movies with Ben and brother Casey is a breeze. Damon says they are like his brothers and egos are put aside when they collaborate, which Damon and Casey did on the new film The Instigators, a crime thriller available to stream August 9th on Apple TV. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Partly cloudy today. We will get into the upper 70s to around 80 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the southeast at 5 to 10. Tonight, a sprinkle or two possible. Otherwise, partly cloudy, low of 60. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the mid to upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 57.
Busted pencils.
Fully leaded education talk.
Brandi Weingarten, the dynamic and influential president of the American Federation of Teachers.
The Heritage Foundation want their way of life rather than the diverse, pluralistic democracy that has been America for 247 years. It's this fight between anger and aspiration.
Busted pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny. Weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Allbush Show.
Trigvi Olson, senior advisor with the Lincoln Project.
You know, one of the things I think that you've done with this show, and I'm proud to be a part of it, is we've really tried to get out and listen to people.
And that's why I'm so thankful to work for a company like Civic Media that allows us to do that. Because the more we get out and listen to our friends and neighbors, we discover they're not our enemy. We're all Americans, and it really is a melting pot.
The Todd Allbush Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Discover Wisconsin host and Survivor, Andrea Belke. And from the hit Madison stage show, Paul Blart 3, Nathan Talaga.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, weeknights 7 till 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
All right, hanging out here on a beautiful summer night here, talking to my fellow Wisconsinite, I just learned, Thomas Lennon.
Tom,
that's me.
Yeah. So are you having a good summer?
It's been amazing. It's going by a little bit fast, but yeah, we've been having a beautiful summer. One kind of thing that's been kind of a neat thing, and we might get another one tonight, is down here in southeast Wisconsin, there was a period where we had 30 days of thunderstorms in a row this summer.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, we also had a couple of tornadoes, yeah, which is scary, but I'm a guy who loves a Wisconsin thunderstorm.
Same.
And we just had them back to back to back to back to back to back. I mean, everything looks really lush. It kind of looks like we live in the Amazon right now here in southern Wisconsin. It's also, this week's been real, real toasty, but you know, it's lovely here. We get out on the boat when we can. Just kind of a lot to do around Lake Geneva. There's,
yeah,
a lot of stuff to do. We went into Summerfest in Milwaukee. We saw the Hold Steady. We've been doing cool Wisconsin stuff. We actually went into Summerfest twice, and then we went to, we were out in Madison, and we went to Taliesin. You ever been to Taliesin?
I have not, no.
The Franklin, about an hour west of Madison is the big house that Frank Lloyd Wright built for himself and his mistress.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty interesting. Yeah. And it's got a pretty interesting backstory. If you're ever an hour west of Madison, it's very close to House on the Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, have you ever been crazy old House on the Rock?
Years and years ago. But I'm in Wisconsin fairly often, and I always mean to go over there and check it out. And I don't know why I haven't. I've been going down there every month for the last 12 years. For some reason, I haven't made it over there, but I hear it's amazing.
Taliesin's really beautiful. It's a really cool thing to see. Yeah. We wanted to go to House on the Rock, but I think somebody said there was a fire there. It might have been closed for a little bit.
Okay.
Something weird happened at House on the Rock. It was always a curious old place, up House on the Rock.
I think it was the mistress that set the place ablaze, maybe.
That's actually kind of what happened. There was actually one of the butlers did burn down Taliesin with everybody in it. It's too dark of a story.
Oh, wow.
For nighttime radio. But okay. Yeah. If you're ever looking for a Stephen King bedtime story, look up what actually just happened at Frank Lloyd Wright's house in Spring Green.
Conrad, take a memo. We got to look into that. I see a potential guest.
It's intense.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah. Hey, Tom. All right, so I've been meaning to ask you this for years. I maybe asked you years ago on the set of the film of The Godfather Green Bay, but I don't remember what you said. Where did the inspiration for Jim Dangle come from?
You know, that was a weird one. It was sort of a character I'd done in stand-up a little bit. I had been, I'd done this character who was a recruiter for Space McDonald's, and he was sort of like Jim Dangle, basically, except he had an eye patch. That was really the only difference. And then when we started doing the show, we'd basically been writing a sketch show for Fox, and it got canceled, like, basically at the table read, and they're like, we don't want a sketch show. Doesn't help us at all, and we're like, oh, that's weird, because here we are and we have this cast and we have a budget and what
we just
ordered
lunch.
Yeah, we're like, you just fired us and we're still lunch is coming. So we ended up, you know, we tried to come up with within 24 hours a show that would fit the Fox, you know, that would fit Fox on Saturday night. And you know, the biggest show on Fox on Saturday nights for 30 years was Cops,
right?
So we're, you know, basically we were like, what if we just do like a sketch show that's like Cops? And it was a little more artsy fartsy in the pilot outing of it, because we in the pilot we played all of the characters, so there was never anybody else in the show. So like we would be all of the perps and we were all of the cops. And it was designed to be more of like, it was just going to be like little sketches you would go to, and we would always play the characters that you'd meet, but the cops weren't really the focus of the show. You know, they were just sort of like the thing. They were basically the sort of the thing that got you from sketch to sketch of meeting like funny weirdos with mullets and stuff. And after we did the pilot, the cops became much, much bigger characters. And we also stopped playing all the perps. And so that's when it sort of really turned into, you know, what it's been then, what it was then for, you know, 124 episodes and three movies, which is a lot. Yeah.
That is such an incredible run.
It's been a big run. Yeah.
I can't even. And, you know, yeah. I was reading about, like, I think I just went to your Wikipedia page for looking for stuff about you I didn't already know. And what I didn't know is you and Carrie Kenney got together when you were 16 at a camp and met each other. And she was in Reno, too. And then it just became this snowball of, like, did you ever think that show could become what it was?
For sure, we never thought it would go 124 episodes, three movies. No, it's weird what you get known for, because yeah, Reno 911 is actually our third series, because the first one was The State. So Carrie and I have done, we did The State, which ran on MTV for quite a while, and then we did Viva Variety, which ran on Comedy Central for kind of a while, and then of course a ton of shows in between that were just pilots that never got picked up, and then Reno, which didn't get picked up, because we actually did Reno for Fox, and then they didn't pick it up, so it sort of sat there for like 3 years, and then Comedy Central saw a tape of it that we showed them, and they're like, oh, let's do this. So Comedy Central ended up buying the rights to it from Fox, where it just sort of languished for a long time. But yeah, I actually thought, you know, after we shot the pilot for Fox and it was not picked up, I was like, oh, that's dead. And, you know, it was interesting, because then that would become the show that I thought was dead would become, you know, basically the main job of the rest of the quarter century of my life.
Wow.
You know, so, yeah.
Did you, all right, so you're also, what I didn't know about you when I met you in person for the first time was, I think one of the producers said, oh yeah, Tom wrote, Night at the Museum, The Pacifier. He's also a big time screenwriter. I was like, what? Like on paper, Tom, based on all the success you've had in so many different avenues, I really shouldn't like you, but you have had a tremendous amount of success. And did Reno help the screenwriting, or did the screenwriting help the Reno part of your career?
I don't know. I mean, I here's where it helped. I mean, what helped screenwriting, certainly being able to act and improvise helps your screenwriting. There's something different, like when I write a script, or, you know, that I've also produced more of my own material than, because I'm a producer and I also direct some of the Reno 911s. But, you know, none of my, when I write something for you, it's not really theoretical, you know, like it's different. You know, there's a lot of writers out there who haven't had as much stuff made. And by the way, when you have a lot of stuff made, it's not just I'm saying it in a good way, but you get to see like the pitfalls of everything, you know, so you get to learn. I have on the job training for so long. I think I've done my, you know, my 10,000 hours in comedy, like, I don't know, three times, I guess now, or maybe more, but you know, so like, I think the improvising helps the writing. You know, most writing is an improvised conversation with yourself, you know, and
right.
And so it's if that's a muscle that you get good at flexing, and it is a thing you can practice and get better at. Writing in general is a thing you can practice and get better at. Same as improvising.
Right.
You know, and yeah, so I think improvising makes you a better writer. I don't think the screenwriting has ever really helped Reno, except for the fact that everyone thinks Reno's improvised, and somewhat it is. But there's also a very carefully crafted outline for every single episode and most scenes. We never go out in the like field and are like, hey, let's see what happens. Let's goof around until something happens. Yeah, that's never, ever what we do.
That does not surprise me at all that you say that, because there are shows that have this reputation of being all improv. And, you know, oftentimes I watch these shows that are critically acclaimed and I go, they need a script. It's funny. It's got great moments, but I'd rather see something more concise. And I never got the feeling that Reno, like you just said, did that. You guys always were so on point.
Everybody's like, it's an improv show. It's a show where I think the distinction that we could make that's really true is it's a show where the dialogue is improvised.
Okay.
Which is, I think, the other reason, weirdly, most cops, I mean, a lot of cops that I meet, obviously they're talking to me, so it maybe ruins the experiment, but a lot of cops say that Reno 911 is the most accurate police show on television.
Oh my gosh, is that beautiful.
And I think I realized why at some point. It's like, not because it's always like, everything's horrible and everyone's dumb all the time, but it's just because we don't sound like someone wrote us. You know, we don't sound like we've been carefully honed by a crack team of, you know, just because we're saying the dumbest stuff that can come out of our mouths.
Do you have a script or a project that you wrote? Maybe an example of each one that got to the screen as close as possible as to how you envisioned it when you wrote the script, and one is far away from possible that's hard to watch?
Sure. Well, there's a couple, like, the two that I think are a good example of, like, one is just verbatim what we wrote, and that would be like Hell Baby, which is a movie very few people have seen. I'm super proud of it. It's just like a funny horror movie set in New Orleans, but a movie that's almost verbatim the script word for word, close as the page as it could be, is the first Night at the Museum movie.
Wow.
And
really? Nice.
The reason is because the movie was going so fast and was in production, but all the special effects people had to start moving very, very quickly. And, you know, they had to have plates and they have to know where the T-Rex is going to be. And there's a lot of moving parts. So I think in a simple way, the problem sometimes with scripts is if you have them for a long time, the studio has them for a long time, they start to fix them. And with Night at the Museum, the finished movie is closer to our first draft of Night at the Museum than anything's ever been, which was really neat. It was just a cool thing to see. And then furthest from what we wrote, that's tough. I mean, you know, I've never, like, there's never been a movie. Well, I will say we our very first movie we wrote was called Let's Go to Prison, based on a script we'd written called You Are Going to Prison. And it was a really, really dark, like, prison comedy, and Bob Odenkirk directed it. It was really, really cool. And it had tested so well for a while that they went and shot it like a new ending to make it even better. And then the ending, which we did not write, kind of surprised me in the movie theater. And it was like trying to be real upbeat, but it was just something was really weird about it. And it kind of threw me for a loop. And it ended up, like, the movie was not really a hit. But I remember it was very different. I had seen a cut of it and I was like, wow, this movie's turned out awesome. And then I saw a cut. And then we went to the movie theater and bought a bunch of tickets to go see it. And I was like, oh, this movie's okay. It definitely had changed a lot from when we'd, like, seen the last cut of the movie. So, you know, you got to remember, when you write studio movies, you're a contractor.
Yeah.
You know?
My guest is Tom Lennon. He is a writer, director, producer, actor. You might know him as Reno 911's Jim Dangle. He is with us tonight on Nightlight. Tom, when it comes to comedy, and I'll use a guy thing as a perfect example of this. When that script sold, it got us a ton of meetings. People love the script, and they love it so much, they keep reading it over and over and keep finding things to change. Have you, your experience? Because it was maddening for us.
Yeah. Do you remember there was a great line in my favorite movie about Hollywood called Barton Fink?
Oh, I love it.
Where Tony Shalhoub is talking about the head of the studio, and he's like, he has taken an interest. What did you say to him? Because he has taken an interest. And it's like, suddenly the studio head is very on, is very interested in what he's writing now. And it's like, it ruins everyone's the good time they're having now that people are paying attention. But yeah, you make a good point, which is, you know, familiarity breeds a little bit of contempt. Sometimes you got to be careful. You know, sometimes you just want to be the last person in the room. It actually is always helpful sometimes when you're rewriting movies, because people want to hear something new, you know, a new pitch on something. Also, a lot of times when people are making a movie in the studio system, it feels like sometimes people forget what the intention was.
Yes.
There's so much money and there's so many people involved, and everybody starts coming with ideas. And sometimes those ideas, a lot of those ideas are making it better. And a lot of those ideas are just becoming hats on hats on hats on hats. And you can actually start to lose the forest for the trees, you know, and start to kind of, you know, a big thing that in the script doctoring world that I've done my whole career is come in and look at a movie with the studio people and try to remember what they loved about the idea before the last year went by where they basically, you know, that's the other thing. Is like,
hey, Tom, hold that thought 1 second, okay? Oh, sure. We'll pick up there right next. We got to do a quick thing here. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Tom Lennon's hanging out on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Today, I'm going to talk about minimum payments on credit cards. Now, those wily rascals at credit card companies make it pretty easy for us to pay our minimum payments. But are minimum payments good for us or good for them? Let's take the average American amount of credit card debt, $6,000, and the average APR, or interest, which is 22%. Now, if you pay that off at $200 a month, which is the general ballpark minimum payment, it's going to take more than 3.5 years and cost an extra $2,800 in interest payments. But if you ignore the minimums and pay it off at $400 a month, you'll pay your debt off 2 years faster and $1,800 cheaper. Minimum payments keep you in maximum debt. For more practical money tips, check out workmoney.org. Till next time, take good care.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back. Tom Lennon is here with us tonight on Nightlight, helping me close down the show here. Tom, you were saying that before. It's kind of like too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, everybody wants to make a great film.
But exactly. Yeah. And sometimes those are made, you know, it's tough to make things with a big committee sometimes, you know what I mean?
Especially comedy, I think.
For sure. You know, it's or what you need, you know, you definitely need like a very strong opinion at the top who can't be messed with, you know,
right.
Is also very handy, you know, but you know, it can be tough, and you can see it even in the rooms of the funniest people in the world, which I've been lucky enough to be a part of. I feel like a couple of times where, you know, people are coming in and like, they're going to round table a script or the movie's already done and you've looked at it and you're going to try to fix some stuff. And you know, there's a real tendency to get lost in the weeds in those, you know, where sometimes people are sort of being funny for funny's sake, but there's, you know, there's being funny, there's just saying funny things and doing funny things. And then there's like the entire concept of making a movie funny, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, we talk about it in our screenwriting book a little bit, which is like, there's a lot of guys who've written books about how to write an amazing screenplay, yet none of those guys have ever written a movie that made any money ever.
Right.
It's literally never happened. The only screenwriting book by people that have ever made a movie that made money is me and my writing partner.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. we had a chapter about that in the book, but it was so mean that we took it out. we were like, but you know, it's like, we're like, look, you wouldn't call somebody who'd drawn a bunch of blueprints for houses that never got built, you wouldn't call them an architecture guru. You know, you can't be a guru at something that you've never, you know, like conquered.
Right.
So, you know, it's an interesting racket. The screenwriting racket. You do need to, you know, be ready to take a lot, to not take things personally.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, you said point. As you guys got fired off a guy. I think we got fired off every Night at the Museum movie. That's crazy. At some point. Many of them we got hired back on because, you know, the trick is be nice when you get fired, which is basically the secret to everything.
Right.
Yeah.
We had there was one moment in the I don't know if you remember how much you remember about a guy thing, but there's a crazy brother-in-law Ray or something, and one of the studio people said, could there be a scene where they got to get Ray? Maybe he's on the Chicago Bears and they have to get him to a game. I'm like, well, yeah, we could write that. It has nothing to do with what's going
on. That's an entire other movie.
It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we can do that, but that's a whole other movie.
Tom, you're so great at playing like condescending characters.
Yes.
But off screen, you are like the nicest guy in the world. I love in the Godfather Green Bay, when Lance Barber went up on stage with all his props and you were bringing him up as the MC, Lance said every time you brought him up, you'd say off camera, staying in character, you said, knock him dead, Tubby. And we would just crack up about that. Like, where does that come from? Why are you so good at playing that role? And is it your favorite kind of role to play?
Yeah, it's always good to play the bad guys or the weird guys. I mean, my, yeah, I've always dreamed of doing like Richard the Third. Yeah.
What's
up? I cannot prove a lover, I shall prove a villain. But, yeah, I don't know. There's something more. I said, knock him dead, chubby, every time.
That's what he said. Yeah. What do you hope to accomplish? Like, you've written blockbuster, huge box office successes. Mm-hmm. You're a really respected actor. As you say, you've directed and produced, and you know, you're at a point where a lot of guys, you have no idea, by the way, how many guys that I know from the Midwest who would love to live in Wisconsin because they don't have to be in LA. And yeah. So I say,
I know how lucky I am.
But like, what do you still want to do, Tom? Like, what do you still hope to accomplish?
Well, I mean, I think if you have the same thing that makes you want to do the stuff that I've done and be as persistent as I've been about it, despite, you know, the enormous heartbreaks of being both a writer and an actor that are, you know, 80% of the job is, you know, consistent heartbreak. but I think the way that my brain is just sort of made up is like, I'm just not a person who really like takes breaks or takes even really any time off or like, I'm writing a play right now that I'm super excited about. I'm writing the animated version of my novels for DreamWorks Animation.
Nice.
That hopefully should be coming out in the next 3 to 5 years would be a very good timeline for that. But I'm not a person who can relax. So I just hope I keep finding stuff that keeps piquing my interest, man. I guess. Yeah,
I'm sure you will, buddy. That's so great. This has been really fun having you on, and
it's been a blast.
Maybe we'll bump into each other at the House of the Rock or something. Either way, tell your folks I said hello.
And, I certainly shall.
Yeah, please don't be a stranger. Love to have you back sometime if you just want to talk some screenwriting. This is
I would
fun.
Love it.
All right.
We're in the same time zone, so it's the greatest.
Absolutely. Are you? We got a few seconds. Anything you want to promote? Anything coming up you want to remind people
about?
Oh,
geez. I'm sure. I'm on what? I'm on Animal Control on Fox.
Oh,
currently.
Fantastic. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so once in a while, I'm not in every single one, but I often show up as Joel McHale's weird, obnoxious brother.
Now, that's a good gig. That's awesome, buddy. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks, Pete.
Have a great night.
A lot of fun.
All right. See ya. Bye. That's Tom Lennon from Reno 911. The writer of The Pacifier, Night at the Museum, Balls of Fury, Hellboy. Good stuff. Do you have a favorite Tom Lennon movie, Conrad?
Well, I would say Night at the Museum is probably my favorite, but he also plays in How I Met Your Mother, a German guy.
Oh, that's right.
That's great.
And that's another one of those roles that he just crushes those, man. That's so cool. This was fun. I remember a scene in Reno 911. Where he was dangled and he was dressed as a woman hanging out with some prostitutes in an alley, and the other cops come up and they're like, "All right, ladies, break it up." And he turns around and they're like, "Oh, dangle." he's like, "I'm working undercover, guys. I got this. You guys can take off." And they're walking away. They're like, "Isn't this his night off?" Like, oh, just really great stuff. And a heck of a good guy. Tom took a couple guys that were in the movie that we were talking about, The Godfather of Green Bay, and when they moved to LA, he looked out for them and even got them a role in a couple things, which I think is really cool. So good guy. Great to have him on the show. I would also like to thank, I'd like to thank you, Conrad.
Well,
can I do that?
Yeah, yeah. I think.
All right. And Tony Boswell, too. And thank you for all your texts and participating in Nightlight. We will be back tomorrow night. This is Pete Schwabe and Nightlight. On behalf of Conrad, good night, Wisconsin.
Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we will be live at the Kamala Harris-Tim Walz rally in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. A very special show live on location. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh.
Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Mad Radio.
WMDX 1580 AM Columbus. W224 EG Madison.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.